Hey everybody, welcome to the Real DMC Podcast. DMC stands for Dave, Marks, and Colin. Guys, just a quick question for you. Just kind of wondering if you had, you know, one shot, one opportunity to seize everything you ever wanted. Would you let that moment slip away?
Well, this is our 101st episode. I'm not sure the moment's still there or not.
Hi, everybody. We'd love to get your feedback. You can post a review wherever you found this podcast. Find us on Twitter at RealDMC or send us a message at feedback@realdmc.com. If you send us some feedback, we may include it in our listener feedback section and you'll hear it on the show. Thank you for listening and now on to the episode.
I do have some actual user feedback that was delivered to me in person by Paul Purdy on Saturday night or Sunday night, which was the feedback was, you know, your podcast is really you and Colin talking, and then Marcus just chimes in once in a while. So that's the user feedback I received from a Paul P. So, Marcus, I guess that means you have to talk a little bit more.
So, Paul, do you want more, or is that like a compliment?
So the film we're here to talk about today includes Eminem's one and only feature film performance, directed by Curtis Hanson, from 2002. Let's discuss 8 Mile.
You're still at that Little Caesars over in Warren?
Nah. I'm down in New Detroit stamping now.
You got fired from a pizza place.
Yo, at least I got a job.
Up! Down!
Late again, Smith, and you're fired.
You know that everybody's calling you a loser?
You ever wonder at what point you gotta stop living up here and start living down here?
Look.
Hey, Ray!
All right, come on, man. How you feeling?
If you had one shot.
I'm saving up enough cash to get out of this place.
One opportunity.
I'm on my way. I'm taking you with me.
Seize everything you ever wanted.
If something's gonna happen, it needs to happen now.
Did you capture it?
It's my boy, Bunny Rabbit. He's a genius.
Just let it slip.
What are you doing with your life that's so great?
So Marcus, you were the one who selected this particular movie. Why did you do that?
I picked the movie because it's the 20-year anniversary of 8 Mile. We just saw Eminem on the stage at the Super Bowl, and I haven't seen the movie in quite a long time. I was wondering if it still held up and still was enjoyable, which I think it was. But we can get into that.
By way of just general introduction, so the film maintains a 7.1 rating on the IMDb, which seems appropriate. I was even wondering if maybe it was going to be a little bit higher when I went to check the rating. The film was a success, so it made $116 million at the U.S. box office and $242 million total globally. And it had a budget of $41 million. So, and the other kind of interesting data point, I guess, in relation to box office was the DVD itself made $40 million on the first day it was released, which was the highest recorded single-day sales for an R-rated film. So lots of pent-up demand or lots of interest in this film when it came out, for sure.
Yeah, I totally remember when it came out, too. I'm really looking forward to it. It's interesting to see Rotten Tomatoes because the critics is much higher than the audience. There's a 75% critics rating and only a 54% audience rating. So it's more critically acclaimed than general audience.
Yeah, did you guys look at reviews just to get a sense of kind of what what some of the critical consensus was?
I read through a few and it seemed like more of like, hey, Eminem didn't screw it up. This was pretty good.
Yeah.
As a general feel.
Yeah, I read a couple of reviews. So Roger Ebert gave it 3 stars. He was fairly complimentary to the film. He noted that he was kind of wondering how much of the film was autobiographical versus telling a story. And apparently Eminem has been, has been asked that question probably thousands of times or whatever in different interviews. But Eminem said that he specifically was not making this as a very specific autobiography because he wanted the freedom to take the character in different take it in different directions. And so he didn't want the burden of actually trying to tell an accurate retelling of his youth.
Yeah.
That's what I saw. And then I guess the other thing is, to your point, Marcus, I think lots of conversation about Eminem, and in particular, I think we actually have this as a question later, but, is Eminem a pretty good actor or is he just being himself? And it comes across pretty well. Because I think most of the reviews that I saw were fairly complimentary of his performance. Well, let me ask you this just in general. How about this is obviously relevant for this movie, but are you a fan of Eminem?
I would say I'm a huge fan. Like, I was definitely a fan back in the day when he came out. Really enjoyed his music. And I still listen to it now. I still enjoy it. It's not quite as Some of his stuff's a little bit harsher, but it's still enjoyable. And his music's great. I think he's fun. He's very controversial at the time too. It was kind of a nice, like, kind of refreshing kind of character in the music scene. He's kind of given F you to everyone, which is, I can appreciate. Can appreciate the kind of the punk attitude that he brought to it. So,
are you saying that Eminem is a contrarian?
Exactly. And I can get on board with that.
Yeah, now it all makes sense.
Shocking. Well, how about you, Colin? Just out of curiosity.
I have zero relationship with Eminem.
Did you like the music? Did you listen
to like, the 90s?
It's a good song, but I really don't, you know, I've never been into Eminem's music. I've been forced to listen to it on occasion with Marcus.
Me?
It's not that it's bad. It's just, I don't connect with it really at all on any level. And I don't actually particularly like his style of rapping.
Oh, really?
No, yeah. I really don't. I just find it odd. I don't think it flows that well. I mean, and that's sort of his signature, I'm guessing. I'm no expert, but I like rapping that flows very well.
You don't like the stilted nature of it?
Yeah, the stiltedness of it. Yeah, I just don't connect with that.
Yeah, I would say for me, I have Lose Yourself on my Spotify, you know, the random playlist I put together. And that's, I think, his only song that I have on there. So I do think that is a pretty fantastic song for sure. Otherwise, I appreciate his music, but I just don't really listen to it.
For me, especially Lose Yourself is, I would say it's in my top 10 of best original songs from the Academy Awards.
There you go. He's an Academy Award winner. It's kind of funny, like thinking of the Eminem of the 90s, of like his just like F you to MTV and everyone, just like, and then he's at the Academy Awards, like accepting. Like,
well, he's not at actually, the Academy Awards.
He didn't go, but he won an Academy Award.
He did, so yeah, but he did not. It's, did not think he was going to win, and so he stayed home. I think he was sleeping when they handed out the award, which, by the way, was probably around, I don't know, 7 o'clock at night. So.
No, but do you know, I can't even remember what other songs were up against when Lose Yourself when it came out.
Well, I can tell you, as a matter of fact, we have I Move On from Chicago, Burn It Blue from Frida, The Hands That Built America from the Gangs of New York. And this had music and lyrics by Bono, The Edge, Adam Clayton, and Larry Mullen. I don't know who those guys are, but apparently they're the ones who did the music and lyrics. And then Father and Daughter from the Wild Thornberrys movie. So obviously Lose Yourself is going to win.
Yeah, I mean, I recall when that award was being announced, I'm thinking, okay, yeah, there's some songs that people might know about. And then there is Lose Yourself, which was this huge, massive hit. So yeah. I guess I was kind of curious to see if the voting Academy could actually get aligned behind it, or if there was going to be some sort of resistance to Eminem, because I was thinking that maybe you two would have taken it because of that potentially.
We're hep to the young men. We're getting jiggy with it.
That's right. When I think of a crowd of progressive, fun, exciting people that are on the cutting edge of what the youth is looking for today, I think of the Academy, the Academy Motion Pictures.
Yeah.
Damn straight.
No, seriously, though, I totally agree. I figured that you too probably would have won for The Hands That Built America if even the title of that song wasn't so awful. That's probably why they didn't win.
Yeah, Lose Yourself is such a great like song to get you pumped up and get you like amped up for for something.
It really is. You know, I'll tell you something. I mean, this was unexpected, but when the song came on, you know, the initial strains of it, but then also at the end, like I got some goosebumps actually. Yeah. Like, oh, this is you know, that song does that to me. It's definitely one to get you fired up.
Well, let me ask you a question, because I like the song too, you know? And all I gotta say is why wait until the very end of the movie, to the end credits, to actually play the song?
Yeah, it's funny because I expected it sooner. He does it like they play snippets like through the bus ride and a few other times, but they never like, I'm like, oh, I thought they played it earlier too. The other song, Dave, on the same album, Rabbit Run. I think it's the last track. Give that one a listen to because it has a very similar kind of upbeat. One opportunity, your last chance. You gotta seize the moment. You gotta let them know you've been here. What's the seize the day? Carpe diem.
How could you of all people forget that?
No, I was trying to think of the movie. I still can't think of the movie.
Just look at your t-shirts.
No kidding. What was the movie name? With Robin Williams.
Oh, the Dead Poets Society.
Dead Poets Society. Thank you. I couldn't think of that. My mind went blank. I'm getting old. Okay, man, leave me alone.
Yep. We all are. So, in terms of other interesting production or an interesting production note, so one thing that I thought was kind of fun was that they had 300 extras in the scene where they were actually filming the rap battles. And apparently it took them a couple weeks to film it, and people started getting bored and restless because there was lots of time, you know, they had to set up time between shots. And apparently Curtis Hanson allowed them to stage a real rap battle. So the members of the crowd who could, you know, who had those skills were able to, you know, fight against each other in rap battles. And apparently the top four got to face off against Eminem personally. And so, apparently Curtis Hanson, they filmed all this. Eminem apparently was supposed to only mime his part of those rap battles because he was supposed to save his voice for the production, but apparently he just got too into it and started doing it for real. So there's a few people that got a chance to do some, you know, Eminem rap battling as part of, and they were just an extra that day. So I thought that was kind of a cool story.
That's awesome.
Director's Corner.
All right, so how about Curtis Hanson? Are you guys a fan of his?
Never heard of him. Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, I love him. LA Confidential.
You didn't even know he directed it.
I did not.
Bad mouthing the movie.
I wasn't bad mouthing it, but I'd forgotten that he directed it. So that was actually one thing that made me sort of like, all right, well, yeah, that's right. It's a good movie. It's Curtis Hanson. Like, yeah, that's right. Oddly enough, obviously, my love for LA Confidential, but the rest of his filmography, there's just not that much there, right? The River Wild, good film, saw it once. The Hand That Rocks the Cradle, it's not really for me, you know, sort of.
I'm not sure that holds up.
Nanny from Hell. That I really, really do like, and I've seen it a few times, is Wonder Boys. Have you guys seen that?
No.
Yeah, Wonder Boys is actually great. That's a Michael Douglas.
Yeah, I figure you would like it because, you know, being like a writer and being about a writer. I just really like that. And Tobey Maguire is really great in it. And that's a really good movie. But it's sort of odd that just those two films for me.
Yeah, for me, it would be LA Confidential, The River Wild, and Wonder Boys. Because I really do think The River Wild is a very fun, it's a straightforward, formulaic sort of action movie. But I think it's actually done really well. And it's got some great rafting footage, too. So cinematography, I think, is definitely a strength of his.
Yeah, I think the cinematography also in 8 Mile was, I thought it was fantastic. I thought it really showed the Detroit, it just decrepit and buildings coming down. Just all of the scenes just had this grittiness to it that just looked like it's so great. Cinematographer is Rodrigo Prieto, and he's done Brokeback Mountain, Argo, and Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah, I thought the Detroit world building, if you want to call it that, I thought was actually really effective. I mean, it definitely, you got the sense of the, you know, the grittiness and, you know, almost a very kind of closed in, you know, community or society that was just Detroit. And I thought that they handled that really well.
I was going to say the shots in the shelter too were just fantastic with the rap battle and just amazing scenes, I thought.
Yeah.
Guys walking around in those ski caps like Eminem wears. Like everyone's wearing them. So I thought this movie, I was thinking like, oh, so when is it? Is this like February or something? And then I read that it's supposed to take place in October. And then I was like, oh yeah, of course. Cause if it was in February,
it would
be like snow like everywhere. Right.
Yeah.
It'd be much, much colder, but it always just seems to me like Detroit is a very cold place.
Yeah.
I've only been in the summer.
It's also Philadelphia. You get that kind of similar, like super bummer kind of look.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like we're from California. We're like,
I know.
Yeah, October. That's like shorts. And shorts. And like perfect weather.
Like we're complaining today.
Four because more weeks of good weather.
We're complaining because it was like 49 degrees out today.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh my God, it's freezing.
What happened to our 70 degree days in February?
I'd say one thing about Curtis Hanson that I think is interesting is his movies all seem very different to me, stylistically. Like it's difficult for me to look at a movie and say, oh, that's a Curtis Hanson film. Because if you think about them, right, and the you know, again, the ones I'm more familiar with, LA Confidential and 8 Mile and The River Wild and The Wonder Boys are all pretty different, actually. So it's maybe the one thing I guess he is good at is this idea of world building, because the LA Confidential, we talked about that on the pod. By the way, we do have a full podcast dedicated to LA Confidential, which we'd recommend. It's a fun one. But it's definitely a very comprehensive Los Angeles, like you're immersed in the Los Angeles experience. And so, I don't know, maybe he's good at kind of building those worlds, I guess. I don't know. Otherwise, I don't really necessarily think of it like a director trademark of Curtis Hanson. It doesn't click for me that way.
I totally agree. And I think we may have even talked about this on LA Confidential, but I agree with you about the world building, because
yeah,
I think like even with Wonder Boys, you really get the sense that you're in this
academia. It's like enclosed. This, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's really effective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It captures the place in it, the mood, the place, the time really well.
Yeah.
Few other people were considered to direct this movie. Quentin Tarantino was considered, and he was very, very interested, but it was conflicting with him doing Kill Bill Volume 1 and Volume 2.
Definitely not enough blood.
And then Danny Boyle and Stephen Daldry. So would have been very interesting films.
Yeah, I think Tarantino would have messed it up, though. Like it would have been
Can't really see Tarantino doing this.
That's what I was thinking about. I can't really see Tarantino doing this because there's not enough long form dialogue.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's why I was thinking he'd mess up. Like the dialogue between the friends, he would have just made that. Like
they would have had long conversations about the Silver Surfer or whatever, right? So
I forget the character's name, but he was talking about the burned down house. He would have went for like 10 more minutes on the burned down house in the
Yeah, well, then maybe I would have been a lot more interested in the movie. Although I can tell you there would have been a much larger preponderance of the N-word. So I'm happy to see that we didn't have that in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Casting call.
So I guess we can start with Eminem. So what do you guys think of his performance?
I thought he did a really good job. I don't know. You had the question, was he just playing himself or was he acting? Either way, I think the character is him more or less, and I think he does a great job with it. So I think it's also hard to just make it come across authentic, and I think he does a great job with that. I think he shows kind of his humanity, his struggle, it feels authentic and real, and I thought he did. And I was impressed like the first time I saw it, and again when I rewatched it now, I thought like, great job. I mean, it's not Academy Award winning or anything, but like he's playing himself and he does a good job with it.
Yeah, I think I had the opinion the first time I saw it and same as now, which is I was impressed that he didn't shit the bed, which I guess a lot of reviewers said as well. But no, just that I was really impressed that here's a musical artist who is acting and he seems to me to be a natural. And you could say that, well, you know, he's basically playing himself, but I don't care. Like it's a challenge to act in any movie. And, you know, he's got lines that he has to read and he seems very natural at doing it. And sure, he probably shines more in the scenes, the musical scenes, like the rap battles and stuff. A very admirable performance. I think the only time I think it was a little bit weird was when he was having stand-up sex with Brittany Murphy, which which didn't seem all that like it was like great sex. However, I will say, you know, they were doing it standing up, and it's probably a more realistic portrayal of stand-up sex. You know,
I'm not sure that the sex in a stamp factory is going to be a great environment. I thought the scene went on really long. Like that one scene, like, wow, this is like, they're still going. Like it just seemed.
Marcus,
okay. What more from the movie, not like real time, but it just seemed like they dragged it out a little bit longer than they, okay, we got it. They're having sex in the factory.
Marcus is like, what's this guy doing lasting more than 45 seconds? Huh?
what's your benchmark?
One stroke done.
So I'll give you guys the same general opinion, which is I actually think that he's really good in this movie. And not only that, but I think it's a huge task to take on because he's in every frame of this movie, basically. He's in almost every single scene of this movie. And that's a lot to take on. And what was interesting, there's one thing that's in the IMDb trivia, which, you know, Curtis Hanson apparently asked him right when they wrapped, it's, you know, how was it? And Eminem's reply was, never again. That's what he said. Really? So based on this performance, I would be curious to see, I'd be curious to see him act in another movie. So hopefully maybe at some point he'd give it a shot just to see how it comes out. And I also think that there's an interesting moment, which I'll talk about, you know, towards the end, where you see there's a little bit of a transition, you know, when he gets to the final battle, because he's been a little bit more subdued, you know, kind of quiet. And then, of course, he really comes alive. And so the moments where specifically, you know, where he's at the car, he's fixing the car and he starts going back and forth and, you know, with Future and he's rapping. And then, of course, he's by the food truck, you know, all of those where he has this higher level of energy and he has kind of a glint in his eye. And I think it's really, so it's interesting, either that's some pretty good acting to show the, you know, the difference for him as a character, or it's just naturally how he operates. But either way, I think it actually, he's really effective in this movie.
That being in his comfort zone. And and that's why you see that. I don't know if it's intentional or not, but that's my assumption.
They also give him lots of opportunity to soften his persona, which I think is pretty interesting. Like his interaction with his sister.
Yeah.
You know, he's he defends the guy who's being harassed at the food truck. So, and I was kind of curious to see, or I was kind of curious what your opinion was in terms of how much they leaned into that direction, if that was just how the script was written and it was the story of this character, or if they were trying to, you know, put kind of a positive spin on Eminem. I was actually kind of curious about that when I was watching this movie.
Oh, I think they decided to do that to make the character more likable and the character's representation of Eminem. I don't think they're trying to say, oh, this will improve his image outside of the movie. I think it just was for the character in the movie. They're like, hey, we need this guy to be likable. We need him to, people root for him.
I think it totally works for the character. I'm not going to say that it wasn't part of his own life. I mean, he comes across as sort of an angry young man, but, you know, because of his circumstances, and yet, you know, he's not really that way. I'm like, he really loves his little sister and he wants to protect her. And yeah, I think deep down he is a good guy, but you know, the world's been rough, you know, his whole life has been rough. And you can definitely see there is a character arc in this movie because, you know, like ultimately he sort of says, enough with all those shenanigans. If I'm really serious about making something of myself, I'm going to work at it and I'm going to work hard. I'm not going to just, you know, pay lip service to this stuff. I'm really going to, I'm the only one who's going to get me there is me.
Right. Yeah. That's a nice moment where he basically says we should, you know, we just keep talking. We're not doing anything.
Yeah.
And then he walks away. Yeah. The one question I did have specifically is the moment where he defends the gay character who's being attacked during the, you know, kind of the spontaneous rap battle that erupts around the food truck. Because I know there was lots of controversy with Eminem early on in terms of the LGBTQ community. And so I just thought that was an interesting choice. And I don't remember much about the controversy. I just remember it was there.
A lot of his early lyrics had a lot of very volatile language, let's say.
Yeah, I think it had to do with the F word and not fuck, the other one.
Yeah. Right, okay.
But this also, I think he came out at the Grammys and he did a duet with Elton John. So like, I think he was showing like early on. I think that's where his Marshall Mathers and Eminem are two different. Eminem's a character and Marshall Mathers is like more himself.
Yeah. I'm not in any way making a commentary on Eminem. I just recall that there was controversy and truthfully, cause I wasn't listening to his music at the time. I wasn't very close to it. I just remember that it was there. So, so moving on. So Brittany Murphy as Alex, and it's funny cause when you see Brittany Murphy, she's very distinctive looking to me. So recognize her, and then you remember that, oh, she died when she was 32. Yeah. Kind of, I think it was a combination of pneumonia and some sort of maybe a drug overdose or prescription medication. I can't remember. But, and I guess there's a documentary that's on Netflix now about her life, which I have not watched.
There are some conspiracy theories about, because her husband died a year later of the same mysterious causes.
Or he died in the same house. And then, you know, then there was,
it was like a year later though too, right?
Yeah. So they
died of a pneumonia and something else.
Have you guys watched the documentary or you just know this?
I just trivia.
I started it and I stopped it. It was a little boring. Sort of aimed at the conspiracy theories, but they really didn't have much. I mean, there's been like lawsuits about.
No, I was going to say, but what is the, I'm sorry, what is the conspiracy theory or whatever?
Like she witnessed, or she was going to be a witness in a murder investigation, and supposedly she got offed or something. There's some like bizarre, I don't even know.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But then the whole cause of death was, you know, the coroner said it was pneumonia plus drugs, like drug overdose. I mean, and these are like legal drugs, you know, like painkillers and things like that she was taking for, assuming like the fact that she had pneumonia and didn't really know or understand that. And she was in a very weakened condition. But then
it's
later
like
on,
back pain from her sex scene.
Probably. But then later on, you know, her this whole theory about the mold comes out. And yet, and then her mother just totally discounted that, right? She said, no, that's BS. And then maybe like a year later was on the mold truck. And she was like, yes, the mold killed him. I don't know it, but I think it was probably the coroner's probably right. And I think they were looking for someone to, you know, lay blame.
Just turn it into a salacious Hollywood story.
Yeah. And it also seemed like her parents, who I don't know if they're still married or if they're divorced, were not aligned. And there was probably some infighting going on there about her estate and the foundation that they were setting up. I don't know. It just seems like. Anyway, what it is it's tragic. She was 32 and she died young, and it was, you know, probably very preventable.
Yeah, she was very likable too. Like she's done a couple of romantic comedies and things, and she was a good actress. I mean, it's not.
I always liked her. I liked her a lot. Yeah. Especially, I love her in Clueless. I thought she had a small role in Sin City. I really liked that. And she did some rom coms. But yeah, she's always got like this very infectious energy.
Yeah.
And I really like her.
Yeah. I mean, her performance, she kind of sparkles in this. That's how I would describe her. She's very, you know, sort of, she has a lot of a lot of life to her, you know, when she shows up. And she has a very distinctive look to me. I think her eyes in particular, like her, you know, her eyes are very
dreamy,
or hypnotic or some sort of, I mean, she has really cool looking eyes. And so that's really what stands out
to
me. Yo,
baby, you got some cool looking eyes.
That's my line. And I think that she's actually really good here. The role that she plays, though, is really sort of interesting to me in this film.
Me too.
Because she's, it's like I'm trying to figure out exactly, you know, what is her character arc or what role is she playing? And she is almost like this, she almost like drops in to be this inspirational force for him. Like, you know, a little bit of, you know, kind of, you know, goading him on and egging him on and be supportive. And of course, they have sex really quick. But then, you know, then she ends up having sex with the other guy and, you know, then chaos unfolds. And it just, in terms of her relationship with Rabbit in this movie, it's kind of it bounces around a little bit.
I thought the exact same thing. I kept thinking, why is she here? Why is this character here? What is she doing? I don't understand it. They don't end up together. They didn't fall in love. I don't get it, but I think you're right. She is like an agent of chaos to disrupt his life in a certain way and to show him that, hey, other people, you know, want to get out of here and they're going to do it. And that's sort of the purpose that she serves. And then ultimately the fact that, you know, she then sleeps with the radio DJ
wink.
And, you know, it's like, okay. And then there's this other side to it as well. And I don't want to like be with you. It's not going to be that kind of romance,
right?
But I can see that, you know, this is a way for me to get out. And that's all. And this is what I need to do. I need to like focus. I need to work hard because that's the only way I'm getting out of here is if I do that.
And I think that's why she slept with Wink too. It's like, she's trying to get ahead and like, hey, this is the only way. Here's what I can do to get out of here. And like, it's
right
prompting him or poking him to change, to do something. And like, hey, she's like, I may not even want to do this, but this is what I have to do to get ahead. I'm going to do it to get out of here.
Yeah. And the one thing I like about her character too is I think they give her a lot of agency, right? So she feels very much in control and she's driving, you know, the narrative for her character. So you assume, for example, when you see her in the station having sex with the guy, that was kind of her choice, right? She's doing that. She's the one who's making that decision. Like, that's what it feels like to me when I see that scene. So
100%.
So very much on managing her life and you know, she's using she's doing what she has to do to get ahead, like Marcus said.
Yeah.
But I think it's a good performance. It's not a, It's not a big performance. I actually was expecting to see more of her in this film when it, you know, before we rewatched it. For what she, you know, the scenes that she's in, she just kind of like pops on the screen. So it's a good role.
Yeah, I like it.
So you have Kim Basinger as Stephanie Smith. So it'd be Rabbit's mom. The one thing that I did see in a couple articles was the idea that Kim Basinger would be too beautiful to be in a trailer park. And then I did note from Roger Ebert's review, he says, there's been criticism of Kim Basinger, who is said to be too attractive or even glamorous to play Rabbit's mother, but this strikes me as economic discrimination. Cannot poor people as well as rich people look like Kim Basinger? Given the numbers of ugly people who live in big houses, why can't there be beautiful people living in trailers? So,
good point.
Speak the truth, Roger.
I thought that was an interesting line in his review. And but yes, she is very attractive. And so the one she has one line of dialogue where she's like, "Who would want me now?" I'm like, "Meh, probably not a problem." Yeah. So that's the one line of dialogue I think that didn't quite land for me.
She's not wearing makeup, and so she doesn't look great, but you can still see her natural beauty.
She looks fantastic in all of them too.
Like, I think she looks great to me. Yeah.
Okay.
She's not like all dolled up and like glamour. Like not
right. Exactly.
Like, she's not like she did.
She's not Lynn Bracken from LA Confidential.
Yeah. Exactly.
Exactly.
But she still looks fantastic.
I'm not saying that she doesn't look good. I'm just saying that like they.
You just said she doesn't look great. Roll back the tape.
She's not wearing makeup, and so she doesn't look great. Sorry. I'm done.
By the way, Marcus totally had a thing for Kim Basinger when we were younger, just so you know that, Colin. So you're treading in dangerous territory.
No, I love Kim Basinger.
What do you mean? What do you mean when we were younger?
Okay, sorry. It continues to this day.
Oh boy.
Yeah, Colin, dig yourself out.
She looks great. How about that?
I think the performance is actually really good too. I mean, I think she.
I like it too.
She does a good job. You know, she's kind of all over the place. I mean, there's a vulnerability. Then she's kind of putting on airs when she's trying to, you know, represent herself to the Michael Shannon character. She is drunk at one point. She plays drunk okay, by the way. So definitely crushes Michael Biehn and Navy SEALs as a point of comparison for sure. I think her chemistry with Eminem is actually really good too. I just think it feels very natural, and I think they work well together. So. Overall, I think it's a pretty strong performance.
Question. Speaking of the relationship between her character and her sons, anything edible going on there? What do you think?
Well, are you referencing the trivia note that says that there was a rumor that Eminem started dating her during the production?
No, there were just a couple scenes where I felt maybe she's like a little too close to her young son.
I didn't see it there.
You didn't think that at all? Okay.
Well, I'll note that this film contains the one of the single scariest moments of dialogue ever captured on film, which is when she, as his mom, complains about her sex life because she tells her son that Greg will not go down on her. So, can only imagine. No, I can't imagine having that conversation with my mother.
Yeah.
Sorry, mom.
Which is one of those things that where I thought, well, maybe, you know, like, why would you be talking to your...
I think it was like she has no one else to turn to. Like, she doesn't have friends. She doesn't have, like, people to talk to. And this is who she has to confide it with. I think it's more along those lines. I think it was very awkward and weird. But I think that's what the goal was of that.
So you have Mekhi Phifer as Future. And I actually think that Mekhi Phifer is really strong in this film. And I really love the relationship that he has with Eminem in this movie. And he really seems to have his back. And then Mekhi Phifer just brings really great energy to this performance. I mean, I just think he seems really natural and in command when he's up on stage. Again, the relationship that he has with, you know, all the, you know, kind of the squad, the 313 squad, I think is all, you know, done. The interactions and all that are all very strong. And it just feels very natural. So. And I was trying to think about where I saw Mekhi Phifer. I'm like, where did I just see this guy? And then Colin, I realized that he's in Dawn of the Dead. And that was where I'm like, oh, that was the last movie I probably saw him in. So, but I think this is a really great performance.
Yeah, I agree. Very strong role. And he does a great job. Like all of his friends, I think, do a good job with what they're given.
Yeah, and it's fun because they're all allowed to develop little personality quirks and, you know, sort of their idiosyncratic identities that actually kind of work well together as a group.
I was going to say, they each have a small arc themselves, too, like kind of maybe not arc, but like their relationship with Rabbit changes throughout the movie. And just well done.
So we have so there's Evan Jones as Cheddar Bob, and the Cheddar Bob character is actually pretty funny. So the you know, I'm not terribly familiar with Evan Jones, but I do think that he handles the Cheddar Bob role very well, and particularly the scene with the gun and that whole thing I think is pretty great. So
yeah, he's great. He's in a couple, like he's that kind of goofy guy in a couple of movies. He's in Jarhead also, so like a similar role, I believe.
By the way, you can see in the trivia notes for this, by the way, and I actually listened to a short snippet of this, but I think it was on Fresh Air. Seth Rogen was interviewed, and apparently both Seth Rogen and Jason Segel, who were friends, wanted to read for the role of Cheddar Bob. And so they went over the night before, and they were going back and forth because they were afraid they weren't going to have a reading partner or a scene partner during the audition. And so they were basically playing the opposite of each other. And then they got into the audition room and they realized that they were both doing the exact same performance and they got really uncomfortable and they started laughing in front of each other. And then I think Seth Rogen finally said, "This is not working. We just need to leave." And they left.
That's right. So yeah, that's I couldn't see good. Either of them. They're too smirky.
Oh God. No, yeah. I can't. Neither yeah. one of those.
No, no, absolutely would not work.
Yeah.
No. So you have, so Anthony Mackie shows up as Papa Doc, and this is his first feature film. And this is actually, it was kind of crazy because I had forgotten that he was in this film. And so when he shows up as Papa Doc, I'm like, oh my gosh, wow. That's because I really like Anthony Mackie as an actor. I you know, pretty much anything he's been in, I just think I enjoy watching him. Obviously all the Marvel stuff, but even beyond that.
It's funny because I immediately thought, oh my God, it's Anthony Mackie from the MCU. I was like, oh, that's sort of like my least favorite character that he plays. I can't even tell you what the name of his superhero character is.
It's Falcon, by the way.
Thank you.
Now it's technically Captain America because Falcon and Captain America got merged together into the flying Captain America.
Comics nerd. But anyway.
There you go.
Yeah, he's got a really impressive filmography, I have to say. I look forward to seeing him in some other movies.
I watched a couple interviews where he was talking about working with Eminem and what it was like to work on the movie. And he was very complimentary of Eminem. And what he said was that there were a ton of young and first-time actors on the film, so they were all kind of banding together and helping each other, and he said it was a really, you know, good environment, and he said they had a blast making the movie. So
that's cool.
And then maybe I'll note just Michael Shannon. So Michael Shannon has a relatively small role in this. He shows up as Eminem's stepfather, and he is 2 years younger than Eminem. So
Michael Shannon.
He wasn't his stepfather. He was just the mom's boyfriend.
That's true. Yeah.
Greg,
okay.
Greg mom's. He's my MVP for I love Greg's Michael Shannon worst. So much. Oh my God. Greg is such a chode.
All right. Anybody else in the cast you'd like to hit?
Yeah. John Singleton played the bouncer. The John Singleton.
Yeah. From the director. Boys in the Hood.
Yeah, yeah. The director. Yeah.
Cool. He played the bouncer.
Oh, I mean, the one that actually is blocking? I think the one blocking Rabbit at one point?
Right in the beginning.
In the beginning.
Like, oh, okay. Yeah.
And then later after he comes off the stage of doing like the first rap battle, he gives him his props.
Because of the fist bump.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Janine, the girlfriend, the ex-girlfriend Janine, is played by Taryn Manning. I wanted to call out that she had like a pretty big role in Hustle and Flow. And I know you guys have seen that movie, right?
Yeah.
I like that movie.
Yeah.
Okay. See, to me, I like that movie a lot more than this movie. They have some similarities, but I think that movie is very rewatchable, and I don't really feel the same about this movie.
I recall really liking that movie. I just haven't seen it in a long time.
Maybe Terrence Howard should have made it to the Super Bowl, and then we'd be doing that movie.
I guess so, if you look at it that way.
Yeah.
And I actually like the music better in that movie, probably because there's more of it. There's not a lot of rap battles. So there's not a lot of rapping going on in this movie, I have to say.
Yeah, I think it did need a little bit more. Like one more major scene with it.
I agree. Okay, well, that was it from the cast.
All right, Marcus, hit us with a plot summary.
Aspiring rapper Jimmy Smith struggles in life, trying to find his voice and his way. He dreams of making it big, but his friends and foes make his quest even harder. He just needs one opportunity.
Okay, opening questions.
Is this a sports movie?
Yes.
Totally. I mean, it fits the formula.
Yeah. complete sports movie. I love the rules.
You know, you could actually, you could, let me ask, would you want to watch maybe say a 30 minute version of this movie where it's just the opening rap battle and then the closing rap battle?
Yes. So. In fact, that's what I think this movie should be. I think it could have been about an hour and a half shorter and just had the rap battles and it would have been just as successful.
No. It gets slow in the middle. I'll agree. Like it could have been trimmed a little bit.
Keep it a couple scenes with Brittany Murphy.
I love the sports, the tournament method. We have like the guys facing off. It's very Karate Kid-ish. I think they could have extended it a little bit more because you never saw Papa Doc go in the final battle. You just see the three M&Ms. You don't see Papa Doc like roasting someone else or something. So I think
face off with in the, because it's not Papa Doc in the very first rap battle, right? That he fails.
No, I forget that's someone else.
So you never actually see Anthony Mackie rap in this film, right?
Do we see him rap in the very first scene where he wins that week?
Yeah, he might win it. And you see, like, their first battle.
All right, so I have a question for you guys. So what have been a couple of your, or one, you know, one-shot moment in your life that you had to get yourself psyched up for, fired up for?
Yeah, I don't know if I've had a one-shot, one opportunity.
How about you? How about just a moment like where you really had to psych yourself up for something in life that you can think of?
Each of these podcasts, it's a struggle.
I'm with Marcus on this one.
Right. Well, okay. So I had two that I thought of. Right. So one was when I was applying for the TAP program at Lucasfilm. So the theater assistance program. So working on, and that was, so I remember driving to that interview. And I'd already gotten through, you know, two phases of the interview before, and I was down to one of the last candidates. And so, you know, I drove there, blasting music in my car, and got there about 25 minutes early. And I was on Lucas Valley Road, which is a very narrow road. So I was like, I can't go in yet. So I parked off to the side. And then the person I interviewed with later said, oh, were you that guy sitting in the white car out near the front? So that was one that I had to psych myself up for. And then the other one that came to mind was just, I remember... I'll leave it at one.
Well, now you have to tell us what the other one was.
I'll tell you guys. Marcus just got this, though. So the other one would be probably the moment where... But I do remember, because I remember I remember picking up the phone when I made that call. So that was a definitely psych myself up moment. But yeah, Karkel, you can drop this.
Consider it dropped.
Okay, well, a couple other questions. So what happened to B-Rabbit?
He actually went on to become Eminem.
No, I mean, but I mean, seriously, you think what happened to this B-Rabbit character in this universe?
He saves up his money. He goes back to work. He saves his money up. He makes a studio tape, and it's able to propel him to stardom.
So B-Rabbit was as successful as Eminem in this universe, is what you're saying?
Probably not as successful as Eminem, but he makes it out of the ghetto.
Makes it out of Detroit.
Yeah.
That's the optimistic version. The pessimistic version is that the next week he gets shot by Papa Doc for humiliating him on stage.
All right, well, my last opening question. Who would win in a rap battle between the three of us?
You.
didn't we have our own rap battle once? No, we were just rapping once. Yeah, okay, we were actually rapping. Just singing along with the lyrics of the Beastie Boys. But
Mark would win.
Mark would win. Yeah, Mark is not Mark here. Mark would win. He wins by default.
Okay, ready to jump into this thing?
Sure.
Let's do it.
I do like the design of the credits. I think it's kind of minimalist, and I think it's a nice little way to kind of lead into, again, kind of that Detroit world building. And then the opening battle, what I really like about the opening battle is, Mark has mentioned this, but it kind of feels like, because they're on the stage, the ceiling is low, you got a ton of people packed in there, it's immediately, you're sort of just in it. And I do like kind of how just immersed you get in there. And I also like the fact that they have, that B-Rabbit is this character who's in the bathroom and he's freaking out and trying to psych himself up, right? So he's trying to get himself his, you know, his one-shot moment and get that energy going. And then, of course, he throws up. So just the fact that he's unsure of himself and that, plus the whole sort of the world building, and then when he eventually gets up on stage, I think that the shot that they have, or the shots of the crowd, so you're kind of seeing what his POV perspective would be of the crowd, and you know, all those faces looking at him and how quickly they turn on him, and when he starts to choke, that whole scene, just the energy of that scene is really I think it's really great, and I think it does a really nice job of kind of just, you know, like, wham, you're in the movie. And I like all that quite a bit.
Yeah, totally with you. Like, it shows his vulnerability. It shows, like, so much about his character in those first few scenes that you kind of know. Like, you also just, like, start feeling sympathetic for him. Like, oh, he's trying to get up there. He's trying to take his shot, right? And he just fails at it. And, like, everyone boos him off stage. And just, like, oh, man. Like, it's just a great, I agree, totally great open. And, like, that club or that the shelter, it's just, like, so intimidating, I would think, to be in there and just be like, oh, my God. Like, I'd be terrified on stage there just to, like, try and, like, show yourself there. It'd be a tough place to play, I think.
Yeah, and it's also the fact that you only get 45 seconds during the battle. I mean, that's, you know, that's not a lot of time. And that whole opening scene is pretty good. And of course, then he runs off stage. I do like the Future character, because the other thing that happens here is, you know, both Future and the Alex character are these sources of inspiration or positive reinforcement for him, right? So when Future is walking him up to their stage, towards the stage, it's very much like a boxing promoter or you know, like a boxer's corner, like psyching him up. And then after he chokes, I really do like that, you know, when Future runs out to see him, it's not negative, right? He doesn't sit there and say, like, what the fuck happened or why'd you choke? He's very, you know, he's very supportive, and he's like, just kind of, you know, it's okay. You'll get him next time, sort of thing. And I do like the fact that, what I find interesting about this is, prior to rewatching this movie, I was thinking it was going to be a bit more of a downer than it actually is. And I think that there are elements of inspiration that are sprinkled throughout this movie. And, you know, his friends, for example, are a pretty positive, you know, force in his life. And people are really trying to support each other in terms of being successful. And I just, that whole vibe kind of runs through this movie for the most part. And I think that's pretty interesting, because I was expecting it to be a little bit darker, I guess, having not seen it in a long time.
But I think his friends are super supportive, and like they got his back. He goes out there. No one's like ragging on him. No one's giving him shit for it. And they're just kind of like, no, you'll get him next time. You'll get it. Don't worry. Like, you're still the best. So they definitely very supportive group of friends too. So it's definitely very cool.
Colin, anything about the opening scene or first part of the movie?
No.
Colin, I feel like you don't really want to talk about this movie very much. I'm serious.
Yeah.
Why don't you want to talk about this movie?
I mean, no, I don't have a lot of like things to say, I guess.
All right. We can move on. One of the things that they set up is that B-Rabbit has been, or he ends up separating from his girlfriend. By the way, what was the thought on the pregnancy in this movie? I had a question there.
She scared him.
But why would she have told him that she was pregnant? Like, what was the intent there?
She probably wanted to stay with him or something, like, oh, he'll marry me now because I'm pregnant or something stupid like that.
She wanted to trap him.
Yeah.
And then there is a scene a little bit later in the movie where he goes back and he sees her in the window of an apartment. And what was going on there? Was he thinking about potentially going back to her, or was he just checking up on her? That one I didn't quite understand.
He just saw Alex have sex with Wink, and he's like, I had this other girl. I thought it was going to work out. She just screwed that up. Maybe that's all I have. Like, I think it's kind of interesting too, because in that scene, I think he drives by like a one-way sign pointing like one way. Like,
yeah,
it was kind of interesting. I don't know if it was meant for that or not. But like, you only have like this one choice, and he's like, oh, like he is trapped. He just feels like this is all I have. Like, everything else is falling apart.
Interesting.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that.
I did not even see that.
I might have to go back and take a look at that.
Going deep. It was right after the studio scene.
So, and then there is a scene after they leave the rap battle, and he goes to the trailer, and this is where you're ultimately introduced to, well, you're actually introduced to his mom in an interesting way, because he walks in on her having sex. But interesting, because
awkward.
He walks in on her having sex, and then she asks him later she complains later that her Greg is not going down on her. So, Colin, there might be something going on there. I'm not sure.
I'm pretty sure there is. I mean, at least from her point of view.
Yeah, but the one thing I do like about here is this also sets up his... You see him very sweet and very caring towards his sister. So that's a theme that is reinforced throughout this film pretty directly. I mean, it's kind of a key element of his personality as it's laid out, because there are multiple instances where he needs to be protective of his sister. So, and I think that all that works well. And again, he feels pretty natural. So when you see Eminem or B-Rabbit go soft, it doesn't feel forced, right? It doesn't feel like this is somebody who's trying to act nice. And so he feels very natural in this movie.
Yeah. He's also, you know, he doesn't have a great relationship with his mother, but you know, he still tries to protect her and he's still looking out for her and he wants her to do better. And so like when the Greg is pushing her around, he immediately jumps to her defense.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's a good guy. Like I said, he's just, you know, he hasn't had a lot of opportunities to, this life has given him to be good. He's beaten down, but it, you know, it doesn't show when he's with his sister.
Yeah, he loves his mom, but he's critical of his mom at the same time, basically. Yeah.
And rightfully
he
so.
He wants her to do better for the family, right? For his sister.
Yeah.
Good job, mom.
Yeah, seriously. And this is another good example of the world building, like just showing the trailer and showing where he comes from and showing like all of the, you know, he's getting ridiculed because he got fired from a pizza place. And Greg's like, you know, you can't really hold a pizza place job. Like, and he gets a job at the stamp factory. And it's like, only like, I forgot what he said, like
felons or something like that.
Yeah, like work there or something. Like, so just showing like setting up this world, like he does have no opportunity. He's like fucking up everywhere he goes. And he's just, he can't do anything right. You know, he's just like trying to find his way.
Let me ask you a question. How old is Rabbit supposed to be?
23.
Okay. Still living in a trailer with your mom? Come on, Rabbit. Come on, Rabbit.
So one of the things that happens is his mom ends up giving him a car. It's supposed to be for a birthday gift. Of course, the car doesn't start. So you just see Rabbit under the hood. And this is, I do like this scene because Future comes over. And
Sweet Home Alabama.
What song's on the radio?
Sweet Home Alabama,
right there. Yeah, there you go.
Greg's in the trailer singing Sweet Home Alabama. And so then they just start like freestyling, rapping.
Yeah, they're freestyling and they're
it's great.
Because I live at home in the trailer. Mom, I'm coming home to you.
Break it down.
Well, my name is Jimmy. His name's Greg Buell. Me, him, and you, we went to the same school. This ain't cool. I'm in a rage. He's tapping my mom. We're almost the same age. On the microphone, I drop bombs. Look at his car. Thanks a lot, Mom. Here, happy birthday, Rabbit. Here's a brand new car. You can have it. A 1928 Delta. This shit won't even get me to the shelter. And I can't even sound from Motown. Because I'm back in the 810 now. Because I live at home in a trailer. Mom, I'm coming home to you.
Kind of, hey, so he Jimmy, elevates you know to this level where he's got some energy and he's excited and he's got a glint in his eye and just the ability to kind of turn that on and off, you know, for each of the scenes where he's rapping. I think it's really good. I think it's good acting, actually. I mean, it might just be his natural persona, but it really works.
Well, yeah, it just looks like a very fun scene of like just them laughing at themselves.
Right. So they're having a lot of fun. They're laughing and he's just like rapping. Right. Every time he goes into one of these rap battles, it seems like he's like really has to psych himself up. And it's almost like it's negative. Like, is he having fun when he's rapping? Do you think? Does he really enjoy it?
In the battle? No. Cause I think he's putting so much pressure on himself, but like at the trailer and like at when he's doing it casual. Yes.
Yeah.
I think he wants to create it and he wants to do it. Just I think the way to get recognized in that community in terms of actually being able to be a champion at the battle is a different, that's probably not his preferred way of doing it. Like, I don't think that's what B Rabbit really wants to do, but it's what's required, I think, to get him ahead in the Detroit scene.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
I think he's writing songs and he wants to make music, and the battle is just one, it's a way of getting your name out there. He doesn't care about the battle itself.
You know, Alex came up to him or, you know, like at some point in the film and she said, like, I've heard of you. And he's like, well, what did you hear? That you're like a really good rapper. So it's out there in the community, but what exactly has he done to get his name out there in the community so far? What has he done before this?
I think Future's talking him up. Just stuff casual with his friends and stuff like that. I don't think he doesn't have a tape yet. Just probably things he's done casually. Future is talking him up.
Like the gathering on top of the parking garage where the different groups are rapping, like that kind of thing.
Mm, okay.
And then so they go out and they're, you know, terrassing around the town. A couple of questions around this. So are they taking shots at the Beastie Boys? Is that the back and forth of that dialogue?
Yes. Yeah.
So, okay. I thought one was defending and one was capping on it, but I can't quite. I'd have to go back and watch the scene again.
Well, I think it was Cheddar was the one who was defending them. And so... Having Cheddar as the only one in your corner is probably not a great thing.
Yeah, yeah, so the one bad thing about the movie, they take shots at the Beastie Boys.
Yeah, the Beastie Boys do take a couple hits there.
That's right. But it's, again, like the, I think it helps sets up his character. Like, even the white rappers who are, you know, many would consider great, are not given much, you know, respect, right?
So anyways, well, they're out tearing around.
I thought it was fun. I thought them, like, they like got so fired up. They got this like total piece of shit car running. It's like complete junker, but they're all fired up and they're driving around town having a great time. It's just like, it was just a very like,
yeah, it's kind of reminiscent of some of those like high school cruising around days, yeah, like that, like, that kind of energy, right? Where you're not sure exactly what's going on, but you're just going to go out and see what you can, what kind of shit you can stir up.
Yeah, just a little menace. Like, it's a little devil's night in Detroit. No mischief. But yeah, also like when he first pulls out, like you see him pulling out a gun, you're like, oh shit, is this going to start turning real? And it's like, oh, it's just a pink gun. You're like, oh, thank God. Like, and so then it becomes fun. For a moment though, I like, wait, I don't remember getting it that serious.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because I have that as a note, which is when Cheddar pulls out the gun, yeah. I do like the fact that the way that pretty much everybody responds, including his friends, are, yeah, whoa, 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 you know, what are you doing with the gun? Put the gun down. Everybody's freaking out. And it's probably a combination of, you know, one is it's Cheddar with the gun, right? And Cheddar has not necessarily proven himself to be the guy that you probably want to be handling the weapon in your crew, right? So that, you know, so everybody's reacting to that. He's probably going to be a little bit unpredictable. But I do actually like the fact, because I think having recently just watched The Wire, for example, and, you know, a bunch of other movies, that I did like the fact that there was not a ton of gun violence and you know, threats of gunfire. I mean, there's Papa Doc flashes it a couple times, and I actually think that's really good, because at the end, when Papa Doc does really directly threaten him with it, it's more impactful, right? It's not like everybody's been flashing a gun all the way through. So yeah. I just think the use of guns, and in some respect, the lack of the amount of guns that you see in this movie, is an interesting choice, and I think ultimately a positive one.
I agree.
Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised by that.
Yeah, I didn't want to have people getting like that. You know, I didn't want to have characters getting killed, and I couldn't remember if like someone got shot or what. I remember that somebody got shot, but of course it's just Cheddar shooting himself. So,
and it'd be a little more fun than not. Yeah, I did love the end of that them driving around scene where they shoot the cop car with the pink gun, and then they start going, they're all laughing, and then you hear the sirens and the car dies, and they have to like coast, and they're all like freezing.
That's the thing that saved them, which is so great, is that
it's awesome.
They got saved by their piece of shit car.
Yeah. And then the car goes by with the siren, and they're like, you were scared. No, you were scared. All like laughing at each other. It was great. Good fun. Great scene.
Yeah, I do like the tension in the car when they first hear the sirens and B-Rabbit's like freaking out and all that. I think that's pretty good. And they're talking about throwing the paint gun out the window.
Yeah, I think it's a great, like that whole sequence, I think is great. Just showing like they are just friends like hanging out. They are like, you know, they got each other's back and stuff. So I think it's a overall great.
It's just that this is their life, and like this is, I mean, yeah, they're not in high school, but this is still like one of the only fun activities that they have.
Yeah, getting together, right, at a hangout, because you can do that for free, basically.
Yeah.
They didn't have a Campbell Roasting Company to go drink coffee and smoke cigarettes.
Yeah, so then Rabbit is, you know, so he has a job at the stamp plant, and I mentioned this before, but there is a scene where he's at the food truck, and he jumps in and, you know, spontaneously engages in a rap battle with somebody. And it is to defend a gay man who's there, who was on the receiving end of some negative rap from another guy who worked at the stamp plant. So it's just interesting how much, you know, rap battling as a form of just, you know, day-to-day communication in the community. Like you get the sense that, or they do a good job of kind of establishing that as the norm. So it's like everyone's rap battling everybody.
Yeah, I thought it was a great scene. I enjoyed that scene too. It was just kind of a fun, you kind of see him, because you hadn't seen him do battle yet, and that's like really one of the first times you see him kind of come out and show his stuff. You saw a little bit, they did the parking lot. So when they're in that parking lot and they do the Free World's already there, and like there's a little bit of rapping that they start doing. And then Papa Doc comes over, and Future like mumbles himself, no, fuck the Free World. And then Cheddar like yells it out.
Yells it out.
Like totally loud. Like, oh,
I do love the takedown. Is that is Papa Doc who's on the hood of the car, right?
Yeah.
I love the takedown, the running up and grabbing him by the ankles. That's a great move, actually. And then he falls pretty hard.
Yeah, it's a good showing of the two gangs, you know.
Yeah. But again, also nice that yes, they do beat on B-Rabbit at the end, but
yep.
Up until that point, it's not, you know, there's never not an immediate threat of, you know, imminent gunfire. So I just like that.
Yeah.
By the way, so I think it happens a couple times in the movie, but it happens between Eminem and Alex or Brittany Murphy. And you see, like, Eminem's use of the middle finger is actually kind of strange the way that he does it. I don't know if you noticed that, but the thumb is, like, fully extended, and I think the, like, one other finger's slightly off. And I just thought, oh my God, that's kind of weird. And then Brittany Murphy does it the same way. And apparently, and I was like, oh, I'm like, I just randomly noticed that, and so I did a search. I'm like, oh, just, I bet there's nothing on this. Sure enough, I found an article. Apparently, Brittany Murphy had never flipped anybody off by the time she didn't know exactly how to do it when she joined this movie, and then she copied Eminem's weird way of doing it. So that's why they both have a slightly weird middle finger. I just thought, no, that's interesting.
Well, that's funny. I love that first scene when they're at the plant, and like he's like, oh, trying to like escort her, but the boss takes her, and so like he turns and like flips off the boss behind her back, but she like peeks and sees him, so she just flips him off immediately too. It was like very, very kind of cute scene. Yeah, that was great.
Yeah.
So how do you flip someone off?
Like this. You got the thumb. The thumb is closed in.
You go full long finger.
I go full finger.
No. You go okay. So full long or the two?
No,
the two,
like the, I go full long.
Okay.
Like you go that severe.
No, none of this shit. No. No.
Depends which one.
I think maybe when I was a kid, I think I used to do it this way, and then like my brother said, "Oh no, this is the real way to do it."
Yeah, this is a little more fierce. This is more of a like we're just doing like more gentle, and then we're, fuck you.
My neighbors who like were essentially like my big brothers, they had an actual like a little statuette of the middle finger like this, the way I do it, and so that's of course that's how we all did it.
And if you want to hear more about Colin's early days and shenanigans of being corrupted by his neighbors, I would recommend the Dazed and Confused podcast, yes, where Colin goes into that in great detail.
That is true.
So at some point, so B-Rabbit does go back to the trailer, and there is a fight with Eminem and Michael Shannon. And I have to say that, you know, B-Rabbit's pretty scrappy, so he gets in some good hits because Michael Shannon towers over him, right? So Michael Shannon's 6'3", and Eminem is 5'8". And Michael Shannon just looks a lot bigger than him, but B-Rabbit is able to get the upper hand there. But I'm not sure the staging of that fight was real great, honestly. Like I think they gave B-Rabbit some, or maybe he just got a couple sucker punches in, and that's what, you know, knocked Michael Shannon off.
No, he was fighting inside a trailer. He's fighting for something, like, right? Yeah. I think he's like fighting to protect his family, and so he's
gonna I get the reasoning about why he did, and it's a nice character moment, like, in terms of seeing
have more motivation, have more energy for the fight.
So he's just.
Yeah,
but also fired up, is what you're saying.
Come on, guys.
Adrenaline.
Greg is a total chode. Of course, Greg's he's not gonna fight back. He's just gonna be like, "Get off me, man! What are you doing?
Yeah.
Get off me!"
Yeah, that's the most unbelievable thing, is that Greg would be dumping Kim Basinger.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and that is where she had the line, "Who's gonna want me now?" Yeah. So then, by the way, so B-Rabbit then is he goes to the studio because he was. I'm sorry, what's the name of the guy who's Wink. The promoter?
Wink.
Wink.
Yeah,
yeah, so Wink.
Right before this, he got in like a fight with his friends. Like, I think he was down. When was it? He was like down in the basement. He got in a fight with Future. I think they were trying to talk him up. Oh, Future signed him up for a battle, and he didn't want to battle.
For the battle, yeah.
Yeah. And like, he ain't the Future of shit. You're just David fucking Porter. So it's kind of calling him out. And I think, I forget if it was then or when, he's like, all we do is talk about, like, we're just talk. We're giving ourselves these names, and we're just making excuses and not doing anything. I think he's just getting fed up with, around this point, like, he's like almost as low. He's just like fed up with everything.
Yeah, I'm actually glad you mentioned that, because I do really like the scene a little bit later before the last battle where
he makes up.
Future goes into the bathroom where Rabbit was and he was getting sick. And then you see Rabbit kind of like realizes, like, oh, I was being a dick to you earlier. And Future just cuts him off and says, you don't even need to worry about the apology, dude. Just, you know, just go out there and kick their ass. And it's just another great moment of this Future character serving as this inspirational force behind him. So,
yeah, the relationship with all the friends is just great between it all.
It's great. Yeah. I mean, it's, I think I already mentioned this, but it's reminiscent of the the friend energy in Good Will Hunting, like where they have the, you know, the pack where they have, they're very loyal to each other. It feels very much like that to me.
Even Cheddar.
Well, even Cheddar, because Cheddar's...
He went to Cheddar's house after he got shot himself.
Cheddar's a little bit of... There's a little bit of Casey Affleck character in Cheddar there, maybe. I mean, slightly stupider, perhaps.
No, Cheddar's just like a dumb, loyal puppy dog.
When Brittany Murphy goes to see him at the stamp plant and, you know, talks to him about going to the battle, it's, again, she's just this one last little poke to get him to go because, you know, she kind of says, you know, you're afraid, and he says, I'm not afraid of those guys. And she says, I know. And so she's kind of acknowledging that the fear that he has to face is his own, you know, in terms of what he has to go through, versus it's not that he's intimidated by, you know, the Papa Doc and that crew. It's more just, you know, you got to find it within yourself, right? And move forward and go kick some ass. So I do think that it's just kind of fun, the little positive pokes that he gets along the way. He has a supportive group around him.
What do you think her motivation is? Because I was thinking it was like, well, she heard he's might be this rap genius, and so she's, you know, prodding him to do this stuff because then she could get with this guy who's going somewhere. But then she's like, so she's headed someplace herself. So is it that, or
she just wants to see greatness? Like, she wants to see him live up to his potential. I don't think she's trying to like ride his coattails or anything like that.
Yeah, I did not get the sense that in any way it was motivated by the idea of being able to, you know, hook up the gravy train at some point, right?
Okay.
I think it was more that she was, I think she recognized in him somebody else that wanted to get out and get away. And so she was, that's where they had, that's where she was supporting him, right? So it was just recognizing that, whether, because she doesn't know if he had talent or not at that point, right? Because she hadn't seen him really do anything.
I think she's just trying to be encouraging and just trying to like, hey, get out there. It's also probably for herself. She's probably psych herself up because she's trying to get out and like, you give the best advice of the advice you want to kind of give yourself or you should take.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then, so Rabbit heads out of the bathroom and, you know, onto the stage for the final battle. And the one moment I do like is, you know, he's looking in the mirror and they comes in and says, you have to face such and such in the first round. He's like, I don't give a fuck who it is. That doesn't care. Right. So at that point he's got his mojo and he's starting to go. And then, you know, as he jumps up on this, or as he gets up on the stage, you know, each of the rap or the first couple ones are the 45-second ones are all, you know, pretty good and fun. I mean, the lyrics and his delivery and all that, I think, is actually, I mean, it's fun to watch because he's very good at it. So all that, I think, works really well. The one moment for me that is just a little bit different is the 90-second battle against Papa Doc, because when he turns to the crowd and he like, puts his hands up and he has the energy going, it's just like...
Now everybody from the 313, put your motherfucking hands up and follow me. Everybody from the 313, put your motherfucking hands up. Look.
Whoa, I watched that scene, and that's a scene that I've actually rewatched on YouTube over the years a couple times, even though not fantastic. Watching this full movie, but I love that moment. I mean, that's just very like, wow, that's just, there's something there. And so I think it's pretty cool. It's very energizing to watch that moment.
Totally agree. That's like best scene, best shot in the movie. You got the whole crowd like with their hands up in the air, like yelling it.
Yeah.
Just all bouncing and just like, just a fantastic movie scene for sure.
Yeah. It looks fantastic. It's just super high energy and it's intense in terms of, you know, that it's just like the energy of everybody in the crowd, and it's just, and it's in a small space and
they're all bouncing together and just like, it's great.
I think that what I appreciated the most, and I didn't even remember it, was that like it's got the structure of a sports movie, and so he's got, in the first two rounds he gets to go second, right? He gets to go last, and he gets to be the one who's responding. And then what happens in the championship round? He's got to go first, and you're like, well, how's he supposed to do this? How's he supposed to win this? And so he's already at this disadvantage, and then he just comes in, and from the very get-go, like, he's just working the crowd big time, and they are responding.
Yeah.
So it's, and there's a moment that, you know, a thrill that runs through you, like, oh wow, this is going to be good.
It's a total sports movie. Like, the ending is just, the whole thing, too, like, when he's coming into the final battle, the favorites are all taunting him, like, oh, you're not going to be able to do it. He's, like, total underdog. And just like, just seeing the Karate Kid that tournament event style. Like, okay, right. You got to get through this. You got to get through this. I think they could have done a little bit more and like really embraced that. I don't know if it would have been better or not. Like to give like more, like, cause in the Karate Kid, you see all the other characters fighting a little bit. You have a little bit,
right.
You know, a little bit about the Cobra Kai dojo. So like, maybe they could have done a little bit more there. So who he's taking down as he goes, but like The Quick and the Dead's another great tournament movie. Yeah. No, I loved it. Just the ending, the energy, and the rapping's fantastic. Just like the taking down of people just.
Yeah. And the other thing that's interesting too is, you know, his voice is so distinctive that, you know, when he starts doing it, it's just, you know, it's kind of, it's just fun to listen to. He's really good at it. And then one other thing about that particular scene. So apparently, Eminem was trying to figure out what kind of lyrics they were going to do. And, for, you know, kind of Papa Doc as part of the takedown. And in the script, there wasn't a lot there apparently. And so he went to Anthony Mackie and he said, "Hey, do you mind if I actually pull some of your personal information into this rap battle?" And Anthony Mackie is like, "Yeah, sure, whatever." So when he sits there and says, "You know, you have your parents love each other. You went to a private school." That's all real stuff about Anthony Mackie. And apparently Anthony Mackie didn't know exactly what he was going to say when he did it. So he was watching him just like do kind of a real rap battle takedown of himself as a person. And so, and you can see a couple, I looked at a couple of interviews where Anthony Mackie talks about the experience and he says it was kind of fun, kind of cool, but also it really caught him off guard because he wasn't really expecting it to happen. So, so I think that's kind of fun.
I didn't, but for course I knew what was going to happen. Because I'd seen the movie, but you did not know that was going to happen at the end of the movie. Like that was a great surprise.
Yeah.
I still I almost forgot. I'm like, wait, does he, cause I haven't seen this movie in probably quite a long time. So I did forget if does he come back and he wins on voting or does he, I kind of forgot the final bit. I also did like that at his last battle, he kind of embraces like who he is to a certain degree, like, right. Like what he's saying is like, hey, like he just lays out like, this is my life. This is who I am. I'm white trash. I'm proud of it. Like,
fuck a beat. I go a cappella. Fuck a Papa Doc. Fuck a clock. Fuck a trailer. Fuck everybody. Fuck y'all if you doubt me. I'm a piece of fucking white trash. I say it proudly. And fuck this battle. I don't want to win. I'm outie. Here, tell these people something they don't know about me.
This is me. And like, he just lays it all out there and I think he finally realizes like, hey, just you don't have to hide who you are. Just embrace it.
Yeah, and that's the whole, you know, embracing himself. He's going to do it by himself. You know, he is who he is, and it's all kind of rolls together. So it all comes together. And then, by the way, I do really like the fact at the very end of the movie, after he wins the rap battle, and everybody's like, "Yeah, let's go out and celebrate." He's like, "No, I'm just going back to work." Yeah. So I think that's it just kind of shows that he's kind of turned a corner and doesn't want to just spend his time doing, you know. Yeah.
He wants to like, hey, I'm gonna.
Yeah, he wants to get after. So he's like, gonna go to work to get the money to get the studio time so we can keep going. So that was a good way to end it, I think. So. All right. Well, anything else you guys want to say about the movie?
No.
All right, Marcus, what did you learn from this movie?
You only get one shot. Don't miss your chance to blow.
Colin, what did you learn from this movie?
I didn't really learn anything from this movie. Maybe the only thing I learned was that of this type of movie that came out in the early 2000s, I much prefer Hustle and Flow.
I didn't learn from the movie, but I learned from the podcast that Colin's a wet blanket.
It's just not a movie that I connect to. What can I say? It's good. But as far as like going deep and...
I think you went into it with that mindset.
I didn't.
Yeah, you did. As soon as I mentioned it at the end of the last pod, you're like, oh.
I know, but then you told me that it was Curtis Hanson, and I was like, oh, okay. Well,
yeah, okay. I think it's odd that you connect closer to like 18th century English films than you do a modern film.
And?
I just find that odd.
I'll say what I learned from this movie is just it reinforced something I've learned from other movies, which is probably stay away from Detroit.
Detroit.
RoboCop, Detroit, of course, Kentucky Fried Movie. It's all there. Just Detroit is apparently a very scary place, so you don't want to go to Detroit.
I've been to Detroit several times. It's not that scary.
I know. I'm just
kidding. Then again, most of the times I was in the suburbs. So.
This is one part of Detroit, and it's also like right. This is like probably one of the peak bad periods for Detroit itself.
Yeah,
right?
Of course.
Like the car industry was hurting from imports and all sorts. Like it wasn't a great time.
I actually stayed in downtown Detroit, I think it was about 3 years ago, and we had a great time.
Well, Colin, why don't you hit us with your closing thoughts?
I was very impressed with Eminem's performance. This is a good film. It doesn't particularly connect with me, and it's not a movie that I would say is very rewatchable for me. I guess I'm on the 20-year schedule here, but you know, this is not a movie, obviously, based on my initial reaction, which was to say, like, oh, 8 Mile, I have to watch that again. But I liked it. I enjoyed it. It's a well-made film. For me, though, too much of Eminem and sort of trying to become something and less rap battles. I think this movie could have used a lot more rap battles.
You wanted more pure sports movie and a little less like character coming up out of the hard times.
I just don't really connect to those sorts of stories. They're not my favorite. People actually have love that genre of film. I'm not one of those people.
Like a Knight's Tale, a squire trying to make it to be a knight.
I don't know. That's more of just a sports movie.
And your letter grade?
My letter grade is a surprising B+. It's a good movie. I can watch a movie and go like, hey, that was a really good movie, but it's not something I'm just going to throw on, you know, on a random Thursday night, Dave.
There you go.
No.
All right. Marcus.
I enjoyed it a lot. I hadn't seen it in quite a long time, and I was wondering if it would hold up. I think it definitely holds up. I think it's a great, great story, well told. I think the acting is good throughout. Eminem does a good job with it. The scenes are really well shot. I don't remember it being as not very scenic because it's a gritty look at Detroit, but it's definitely
cinematic.
It's very cinematic. It's very well shot. The scenes in the shelter with the rap battles going on are fantastic. The overall mood, the characters, the friends, and the friendship that they show, I think overall really good. My letter grade, I give it a solid A.
I'll give it a B+ as my letter grade up front. And I think that I really enjoyed this movie. I think it's a very well-made movie. I think Eminem's performance, to echo Colin, is really strong. I think actually pretty much all the actors in this film, I think it's a strongly acted film. I mean, everybody feels very real, and you know, and the environment and the world building that gets created, both kind of, you know, externally when they're cruising around the city, I think all that is really effective. Also the idea that there's only so much of kind of a community of people that end up kind of going different places within the same city. So it kind of reinforces this idea that, you know, it's an overall sort of small world that they're living in, right? Those that are really focused on just, you know, wanting to focus on the battles and the music and all that. So it's, and again, I mentioned the stuff inside the club, I think is just, it's great. And that one scene at the end, I mean, that's, if I ever want to watch just a movie scene to pump me up, that scene with Eminem turning to the crowd, I really love that moment. So that to me is probably, you know, kind of what gives the plus on the B for this. So it's a B+ for me, enjoyed watching it. And I really do think Curtis Hanson is a really good director. He's made a lot of really good movies. And I want to go back and maybe watch some of the ones of his that I have not seen.
Same. I totally, why don't we do that? What, you get to pick next, right? Are we doing another Curtis Hanson?
You're picking the MC.
Huh?
Dave, Marcus, Colin. Colin goes next.
In fact, we are here. So Colin, it's your turn to pick a movie.
Is it really?
Yeah, Dave just picked
The DMC.
I just did 8 Mile.
Eyes Wide Shut.
Yeah, but we did The Crow already.
And then The Crow, and then 8 Mile, and it's back to you.
Oh, I see. Okay, well.
I told you earlier today you're picking again, too.
Yeah. All right. Am I supposed to pick a movie now, or?
The fuck did we just talk about?
Oh, my goodness.
I just meant, that the segment? I guess that's the last thing, right?
Yes.
Everyone said what they need to say. All right. Well, I've been on a David Fincher kick, so you know what's coming. It's 1999's Fight Club.
Nice.
That's going to be a long pod, I feel. We'll have to.
I have not watched it in quite some time, so I've been sort of saving it up. And Yeah, I'm really interested.
I would
to
go
see.
So far as to say that I have avoided watching that movie because I was thinking that maybe some of the messages that were in that movie originally would, I don't know if they'll still hold up today.
Well, that's why I think it's going to be really interesting. Because I don't know that I ever like totally got behind any of those messages. I understood a lot of them, but now I want to see like, oh, how dated might this be?
It'll be interesting.
I mean, that movie's crazy stylish for sure. So
well, that's the thing. I don't think it probably hasn't lost anything from visually, but just the message. So I think it's gonna be a really interesting rewatch.
All right. Well, I guess we're gonna be back with Fight Club. All right, well, I hope you enjoyed our conversation about 8 Mile. We all agree that Eminem did a pretty great job, and it's very inspirational. So if you're out there and you have a moment of one opportunity, just go ahead and grab it. So, and with that, this is the Real DMC Podcast, signing off. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye, everybody. Goodbye. Fucking internet.
The moments where he is... doing some of the lyricism and just work. Shit.
Drop your microphone.
I just drop the mic and walk away. Yeah, fuck. This is a good one.
Get on the mic. Just get on the mic. Get on the mic, Dave.
There's the outro. Okay. So.